This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios. Speak and be heard. This podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications experts and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs, as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? You better visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com/Boise or call 208-IMPRINT. That is 208-467-7468.
Hello, Aaron.
Hello. So sorry I'm late.
Listen, today is a karmic, cosmic revenge. I was early on time.
Yeah.
Was sitting ready, and Aaron was late.
And it's usually the opposite.
I'm normally like, with my goodie bag.
Yeah,
I only have pickles. I only have a bubbly, bounce, caffeinated, sparkling water, triple berry.
Shoot.
You have a sparkling water also, blueberry and lemonade.
Yes, my elitist ass loves Trader Joe's.
Love it too.
That's where you get it. And you bought not one, not two, but three Tootsie Pops.
Well, one's for you.
Thank you so much. I love a Tootsie Pop. And you also have a banana that you're hiding under your chair.
Yeah, because supposedly you're like deathly allergic.
I'm not deathly allergic. It just makes my mouth feel weird.
The mouth feels or...
mouth feel.
I love that word. We got to get straight into
okay,
it.
Okay, well, you know what? We're not even going to talk about what we're watching.
No, we are, because we have to.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Okay, I'm running this show.
Okay, baby.
Let's...
baby? I'm so flustered. I'm never late to this. It's actually what I care about because I'm late to work like every fucking day. Right. I'm the worst employee. Okay. Hit it up.
No, we're going to, I'm super excited. I'm taking off my shorn shoulder.
Oh my God. Who is she?
I'm super excited about today. So we're going to really ram through what we normally do and get straight to the meat and potatoes.
Let's
plow. Aaron, what have you been watching?
I have been watching.
Let's plow. Oh,
I hate that I said that, but I think it's kind of appropriate for who we're going to talk about today. Personally. What have I been watching? Honestly, this has been a busy ass week for both of us at work. So I haven't really had a lot of time to watch something. I started Trial of the Chicago 7, which is nominated for Best Picture along with other awards. I'm almost done. I kind of want to watch it over again because it's an Aaron Sorkin film. You know, you just kind of have to watch it in one sitting, which is how most movies should be watched. But I've just been, you know, kind of supplementing with Law and Order SVU.
Oh, God.
Some Olivia, some Elliot. That's what I've been doing.
Jeez.
What about you?
I watched last weekend, me and my roommate and his brother watched Kramer versus Kramer.
Oh.
So good.
Meryl Streep nominated and won.
Yeah. And Dustin Hoffman also.
Yes, yes.
Best picture and I think best screenplay.
Oh, okay.
I know it won 4 that year. Really great movie. I hadn't seen it in a long time.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh my gosh, she's so incredible. And Dustin Hoffman, so incredible. And then I watched last night, I fell asleep at like 8 o'clock. Like an old
man.
I'm an old man. I don't know what happened to my body, but I fell asleep to Get On Up with same director as
Tate Taylor as The Help.
I liked it much better than The Help. but it had almost the there's so many cast members in The Help that was in that movie. I mean, like a crazy amount.
Really?
Olivia Spencer was in it. Viola Davis was in it. There were two other actors who played a maid, and then the soda hop kind of guy, he was in it.
Really?
There was a lot of actors. Like, he literally was like, you know, copy, paste, let's go. So it was a really good movie. I know you didn't like it that much.
I think I would give it another chance.
I think you should. Now that I'm watching The Help and watching that, I really enjoyed it. It wasn't like the best movie, but it was an entertaining movie.
It's entertaining. Okay.
So no Marvel this week, then?
We have actually caught up on some Marvel stuff. So I think where we left off was we watched Thor: A Dark World, which was like, it was fine.
Yeah.
But we did watch Captain America: Winter Soldier, which I had not seen before.
Oh.
Really liked. Cool story, I think. And then we watched Guardians of the Galaxy, which I have seen before, and I love it. Cried when Groot died. Cried when Rocket talks about being like experimented on. If it's if it's a not a person, I have the utmost sympathy. But like, if anybody else complains, I'm like,
boo, die.
Boo, shut boo. Up. Entertain me.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just kidding. But then, see, I watched it when it came out. But now when Gamora and Nebula are like, we're both daughters of Thanos. And I'm like, oh shit, it's Thanos. So like, I'm finally making these connections
right?
now that I'm watching them. And it's much more enjoyable.
Well, and that's the success of that franchise. It's like everything leads up to that moment. It's not this kind of like, oh, and we're gonna, but no, everything was about
everything's
Infinity Wars, and and so good. And if you think about, I'm sorry, going a little tangent, if you think about it, like 5, 6, 7, 8, I don't know how many directors directed tons of different movies, different producers, different crew, and they all are semi-seamless.
I would agree with that, because you would expect them all to be done by
the same.
I mean, there's a lot of Joss Whedon, and there's Jon Favreau, and Paul Feig is in there a lot. I don't know. But yeah, so there's some similar people, but yeah, there's a lot of different folks on that, which is cool.
All right. Are you ready?
I don't know.
I'm so excited.
Oh my God.
So the last couple of movies Aaron has been picking, and clearly if you listen to these episodes, I've had a problem with it.
So he does big time.
And so I got to pick, and I threw this movie out because I watched it. I watch this movie a lot, I have to say.
Are you serious?
Oh yeah, I watch this movie a lot. And oh, so I was watching it one day, and I like, when I mean watching it, it's in the background, it's kind of playing. And I watched this movie, and there's an essay on YouTube, which I will be referencing a lot about this movie. Mm-hmm. Let me pull it up because I don't want to say it wrong. It's by Be Kind Rewind. And it's a fantastic video essay. And I adore this movie. I'll just off the jump. Oh my God, your face.
If you could see my face.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. I adore this movie for so many reasons. And the movie we're talking about is Mommy Dearest. This is like, I would venture to say top five. I would put it top five. One of my favorite movies.
What?
I've seen this movie countless times. I can quote this movie with like the back of my hand.
Wow.
This movie is incredible to me.
So just to preface, I had special instructions from Colin to watch this movie, which I finished literally 10 minutes ago, which is why my ass was late. And I still had to shower. So I had special instructions from Colin to watch the movie, to not discuss it with him, to not look anything up, just watch it and come prepared to talk.
Yes.
So that is what I did.
Yes. When you said, let's do a podcast about movies, and we were really racking our brain about what we were doing this podcast, this movie, these kind of movies is the reason why I did this podcast, because it is so, you don't get a movie like this often.
Right.
It's about Hollywood. Mm-hmm. It's about an actress.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more than just the movie. It's like the cultural impact that this movie had.
Right.
And like a lot of movies don't, I mean, some movies do, but you don't see a movie like this that just like rocks the shit out of it.
My shit was rocked.
Yeah.
My shit was rocked.
So I'm leading the ship today, which I'm super excited.
Ooh.
So this was directed by Frank Perry.
Mm-hmm.
Just give me a rundown of the basics, which he directed Diary of a Mad Housewife.
Oh.
A few other movies. He's not super well known. It's not like, I mean, I think he had maybe a couple nominations, BAFTA, but like nothing huge. This was produced by Frank Yebans, Yablans.
Yeah.
Yelbins.
Yeah. Yabin. Yabba dabba doo. I don't know.
He's very famous.
Yes.
He was a Paramount CEO or
executive.
Like executive.
Okay.
And during his reign, he got like 38, 40 Oscar nominations, which is just kind of like, damn. So he was a movie making machine.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of good contextual history about like why he picked this movie. Screenplay was written by, are you ready for this?
Am I?
Robert Gelchins, and he directed Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, The Client, The Boy's Life. Again, not
The Client.
Yeah, that one's well known.
That one's well known.
Tracy Hutchins, Frank Perry, which we've heard that name. The director of this film.
Yeah.
Frank Yebbins, Christina Crawford. So there had to have been like maybe 7 or 8 screenwriters.
Oh, son of a gun.
On this movie.
Okay.
Which gives you a good indication of why this movie is the way it is.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
This was released in September 18th, 1981.
Yep.
So an older film. The budget was somewhere between $5 and $10 million. How much do you think this movie made? Because I told you not to look up anything.
I didn't look up anything. How much you know how hard that was for me.
Yes. 5 to 10.
I don't know if this was a fucking flop or if this was a hit.
Just give me a number.
I'm going to say it grossed $56
million. Okay, that was a little extra. Oh. It's 1980.
Okay, sorry. $32 million.
$19 million.
Okay.
But it made, I mean, if it's
it
five.
It made more than it cost,
yes,
right?
Yes, okay, absolutely.
So. Yeah, I was thinking like 2021.
Do you want the critic scores right now?
I want them.
You want it right now?
I want them.
I just did Rotten Tomato.
Uh huh.
Critic score. You guess. Critic score. Rotten Tomato. This movie was made in 1981. Rotten Tomato is a newer thing, so keep that in mind.
Okay. Critic score 83%.
Oh, a little high, but not too bad.
Okay.
Okay. What was the audience?
99.
Ooh, no. Critic score 72.
Okay. Tomato meter 72.
Tomato meter 72, only 42 critics, though. So.
Oh, okay.
Audience score was a 42.
Oh, shit. That's an F.
Yes.
Oh.
And then straight, really going to focus on the actresses. And really, when we get to the meat and potatoes, we're going to focus on one lady.
Oh, my God.
The actresses are in the leading role, Joan Crawford, Faye Dunaway. And she's a well-known actress. Bonnie and Clyde, Chinatown, The Three Musketeers, Gia, more recent, not recently, but like as far as past this film. And then the most recent was The Rules of Attraction, which was made in 2020.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then Diane Scarwile, who played Christina Crawford, the older Christina, was in Psycho 3, What Lies Beneath, which is probably her.
What Lies Beneath?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a throwback.
Yeah.
Wow.
Party Monster, which is another one of my favorite movies.
Oh my gosh, Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then her most recent was Another Happy Day, which was in 2011. I've never heard of that movie.
Never heard of that. So not a ton of success after Mommy Dearest.
Yeah. Okay. The two other actresses that were, there was another one, but she was like in one scene. Mara Hobel, which was a younger Christina Crawford, really didn't do anything after
that. Child?
Yeah.
Man.
Couple movies.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
Rutina Allenda. I'm sorry if I butchered names. She was Carol
Ann. She's listening.
She's
Carol Ann, the housekeeper person, assistant person.
Okay. She did a couple movies, but she's known for something else, which we'll get to.
Oh my God, I'm so in suspense. This is new for me. Okay, go.
Okay, so quick synopsis, maybe. So, this movie is based off of Christina Crawford's memoirs, "Mommy Dearest." Did you know that?
I did know that.
Okay, which was released.
It says it in the beginning credits.
Yes. Yeah. 1978 sold how many copies? Do you think? 1978. How many copies? I love this guessing game.
I hate it because I hate being wrong. 1 million.
Correct.
Oh my God, I'm a genius.
1 million copies. Extremely controversial. It was shitted on, excuse my French, by critics. It was mixed reviews. I mean, it was popular in the sense it was like its first parental celebrity expose. Not really the first, but the most popular, which
Certainly.
We've seen tons of.
Oh, yeah.
But it was the first that rocked, I mean, a Hollywood star, a child of Hollywood
Queen
star.
Queen of Hollywood.
Yes. And so a tell-all.
Oh, man.
Friends of Joan Crawford and even her... kind of enemies kind of came out and said this is all lies, fictitious. It was number one New York bestseller and stayed there for 42 weeks.
Shit.
So it was a big book.
So you're saying that her friends defended her?
Not Christina Crawford, Joan Crawford's
friends defended Joan.
And her enemy, Betty Davis.
Betty Davis?
Came openly said this was all a lie. Or not all alive, but it was either over-dramatized or wasn't the full
truth.
Hyperbolic.
Yeah.
Okay. And critics said about the book, the biggest issue that critics had about the book is that it was almost like a laundry list of like all the bad things that Joan did. And it wasn't through her whole life. It was literally when Christina got into the picture. Christina Crawford, and no one knows, Joan Crawford didn't have any biological children. She adopted four kids. So Christina Crawford and her brother Christopher were all, and then two other, I think they all starts with C's, were adopted. And you see this in the movie. And so the movie really is...
Well, you don't see the other two. You just see her
and you don't, which is interesting. You only see her and Christopher throughout the whole movie. And it shows in these vignettes Christina's adolescence and then adult life until Joan dies in 1978 or something. You see these vignettes of like them interacting, but you never see the other two children. Never. Never even mentioned that she had two younger siblings.
Not at all.
So it was kind of, critics were really, really upset because it was just this laundry list of like, well, she's abusive and she's an alcoholic and she beats her children and she's mean. And it didn't ever conceptualize like why she was like that. What was like the mentality, like what was she going through to make her that way? Now, I'm not trying to give her a pass on child abuse or anything, but it just wasn't giving a full totality picture of who Joan Crawford was. It was just this kind of like, she was mean, she was nasty. And there were other books about Joan Crawford that did a good job at balancing, like, this was a woman in Hollywood who grew up in, like, the 1920s, 1930s, who was abused herself, who grew up poor herself, and was traumatized herself, and that's the reason why she traumatized others.
Right.
Which, you know...
I have some beef with that narrative, but...
It wasn't a well-written book. It was a more of like what we see. It was very much of like, oh, what's those TMZ-ish National Enquirer. It felt more like that than it felt like an actual memoir. Like it didn't wrestle with
interesting
the sticky, icky kind of
pieces.
I
think what I would say to that is that if you're Christina and this abuse has happened to you and you grew up in this incredibly toxic household with this fucking psychopath is what I'm going to call Joan Crawford from this movie. It's not your responsibility to paint the picture of why she is the way she is if you're the one that's like being abused.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. But again, we weren't alive at that time. Like there's probably tons and tons of layers, but that's my first reaction, I guess.
Right. So
yeah.
Just quickly again, the movie is really pretty much about Christina being a little bit about Joan before having children. A
little bit, yeah.
Christina being adopted and their interactions in between. And
throughout then
kind
her
of
life.
Yeah. And then Joan kind of ups and downs within her career, marriages, relationships, boyfriends.
Mostly downs.
A lot of downs.
A lot of valleys in there. Yeah.
And so it's towards the peak of Joan's career, because again, she had a long ass career.
Yeah, she did.
And then the descent, really. It's about the descent of her career.
Definitely.
So I have more questions for you.
Oh, please. I have so many feelings.
So did you know anything about this movie beforehand?
I didn't know anything about this movie beforehand. I had never heard of it. I had never watched it. You had brought it up and I told my dad, hey, we're going to do Mommy Dearest. And he was like, oh, Jesus. So Michael had some thoughts. But other than that, no, I did not. The only thing I really knew about Joan Crawford was that recent thing about like the Betty versus Joan.
Ryan Murphy's.
Was it a miniseries, I suppose?
Yeah, on FX, like 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, so that's
really... Did you watch it?
No, I didn't. That's really all I knew. I'd like to watch it, but that's all I really knew about it.
I think I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
You're in 1981 when this movie was released, and you're about to watch it. What do you think, who is the movie marketed towards?
This movie is marketed towards women.
Okay. That was to be the target audience.
Yeah, so, it's women.
Yeah. So who, what were the feelings or the emotions? Not that you think the director, the screenwriters, the actor, what were they trying to make you feel when you watched this movie? And don't think about now that you watched it, but like in the beginnings, like what do you think they were trying to capture?
I think they were trying to capture, here's this Hollywood, the queen of Hollywood. Mm-hmm. She wants a baby. She wants to have it all. She projects to the world that she is this philanthropic kind. My fans have made me who I am, and I am nothing without my fans. Kind of portraying this person that is not what she puts on a front, but then I think they also try to make her look sympathetic. I did not fall for that, but I think that was part of the goal there.
Okay.
Was to explain her complicated feelings in life.
And you don't think they did that successfully?
I think they did it successfully. I'm just not buying it. did not do it for me.
Okay. Prior to watching this movie.
Okay.
Or even, watching the movie. Do you feel like this movie was a war contender?
Award contender?
Like Oscars.
This was big. This pushed the limit at the time and the subject
matter. No, I mean, yeah.
So yes.
You think it was a war contender?
I think that it.
Do you think the director and the everyone in the cast thought like, oh, we're going to win an Oscar for this?
Not all the cast. I didn't love some of the acting, I'll be honest.
General, do you think that?
Yes. Yes.
They thought it was a war contender.
I do.
Interesting. Okay. And then lastly, rate this movie from a 1 to 10.
Like how I liked it?
Yeah.
How it made me feel?
Mm-hmm.
6.
You thought this was a 6?
5 or 6.
Would you watch it again?
No. I never want to see that again.
What was the single biggest issue for you in this film?
I felt very uncomfortable and I felt very anxious. I did not like the wrath that Joan Crawford displayed. And, you know, I think the term looks could kill was invented because of Joan Crawford, because there's so many scenes in the movie where, you know, someone fucks up. They don't actually fuck up, but in Joan Crawford's eyes, they fuck up. Her daughter, her whichever uncle is in the picture time. And she looks at them and you're like, oh my God, what is it gonna happen? I don't know. And I didn't like that feeling. I also get very upset when children are upset. When children cry, I get really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't intervene because it was a movie.
And no, so, Christine!
So the scene in particular I'm thinking about is the wire hanger scene.
Oh my God.
Where
can we real quickly. This scene, we'll probably talk about this scene multiple times. This scene is by far, if you don't know anything about this movie, it is the scene in the movie. She comes in the room. In the middle of the night and is hanging up some clothes, has a face mask on.
Mm-hmm.
Walks in and hangs up her.
That is Pond's cold cream.
Yeah. So she, some honey or something.
Sure.
She puts the clothes up and she's like, organizing her closet, and then she moves
Christina's closet, her daughter.
And moves some clothes and finds a single wire hanger, your traditional laundromat wire hanger. She grabs a wire hanger and you can just see red, blood, fury. She runs to Christina's room and she's just shaking and she screams, "No wire hangers ever!" And beats the living shit out of Christina.
Yes.
Like, and just like, quack.
Well, and it's like, I buy you these $300 dresses and this is how you treat them. And then she makes Christina get up.
Clean, Christina.
And she goes in the bathroom. This, because they live in this, you know, the best house in Brentwood, according to Joan Crawford. And she goes, are these floors clean? And Christina, who's probably, 7 at the time,
if not younger,
is like, yeah, I did clean them today. And then the other part about that scene is that for some reason, so she shares a room with her younger brother, Christopher. For some reason, he is strapped into bed. He is literally wearing this kind of harness contraption where he is then buckled into bed. He is not a baby. He is probably like a year or two younger.
It's a straitjacket. It's a bed straitjacket.
Right. And so he like unbuckles himself and while his sister is cleaning the bathroom floor. And he's like, I can help you, you know, clean this mess up. And she goes, no, she'll kill me if she finds out. You know, and this dramatic, and then he buckles himself back in. And that scene alone, I watched it last night and because I watched it in two parts because I needed to digest what I saw. I did not care for it.
Scrub clean, Christina. It's not, this floor is not clean. Look at it. This floor is not clean. Like the lines of this movie.
Oh my gosh. There's one I love so much in particular, but we'll get to that.
Okay. So a little background.
Yep.
Really, what was the precipice of this movie was...
I love that SAT word. Good for you.
Thank you.
Precipice.
Was Christina... was the death of Joan Crawford. So what happened was Joan Crawford died. She had about $77 million in inheritance or in her will.
Yeah.
Or maybe $200 million. She gave a lot of it to charity because she was a... philanthropical kind of woman.
For press only, but yes, yeah.
She gave her two youngest, I think they were twins, like something, $77,000 or something, like a good chunk of it. And then she gave, this is a quote from her will and testimony. It is my intention to make no provisions herein for my son Christopher or my daughter Christina for reasons which are well known to them.
So in that scene in the movie, which I watched 15 minutes ago, they're sitting in the lawyer's office, Christina and Christopher. And and after that, the lawyer says those lines. Christopher looks at Christina and goes, what reasons? And then Christina says, and she kind of puts her
No. The line was, she always gets the last laugh.
No, but that's later.
Yeah.
Before that, she goes, she just kind of puts her like head in her hand and she's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Which is what she said as a child one point in the movie. And because she had to be an adult very early on. And then she always gets the last word, doesn't she? And then Christina's like, does she?
Yes. So Christina, in real life, Christina writes this memoir about her mother as, it comes off as revenge, right?
Right.
Christina, of course, is really telling her side of the story, but the arc is she's writing the story in revenge. The movie, Frank Yabun, whatever his last name, like I said, he leaves Paramount. He was like the CEO. He leaves it and he's looking for his next big film. And so this book is in development. He hears about this story. So he buys it before the book is even released because he knows I'm going to make the money. So he buys it. And like is already in the works to kind of produce it.
Yeah.
So they have a bunch of different writers do it. Christina Crawford. They have everybody and their mother writes it. The reason why our director, Frank Perry, is writing it because, let me get to the original director. Original director was Franco Zeffirelli, who directed The Champ, which had Faye Dunaway, our actress, in it.
Oh, okay.
And he really wanted to do this kind of psychological analysis of this woman in Hollywood. Joan Crawford, as we have already said, was like one of the biggest stars in Hollywood.
Hollywood royalty.
And beloved. And so you have this book that's released that just slanders her name. And it's a good opportunity. You know, I mean, you at the time, and still even to this day, you don't really talk about Hollywood stars in a negative portrayal. It's like a taboo. Like, look at the Judy Garland story. Like, yeah, we all know about Judy Garland, but it's still what the Judy Garland movie with Renee Zellweger that she won the Oscar for. It's a good movie.
That was the weirdest fucking Oscar speech, may I just say.
It was bizarre.
She's not all there.
No, she's not. I mean, all that filler has to do something.
Yeah, at some point.
I'm not, just saying.
Just
but
saying, love you.
It's a good kind of this good ebbs and flows of like celebrating her, but then also showing her, you know, her demons. Yeah. This movie, you know, does not do that at all. And Frank Zeffirelli was really looking to kind of analyze that and break it down.
Okay.
Whereas that's not the movie we get.
Mm-mm.
Because we didn't get the director. And interesting enough, Frank Zeffirelli actually directed Faye Dunaway in The Champ. And so here you would have had the opportunity to have a director who has worked with this actress before. Right. And you could have had a very much, much different movie. If you had the right director, the right writer.
Yeah.
This could have been a really
certainly
excellent movie. But that's not what we had. And Bancroft, who was in The Elephant Man.
Anne Bancroft.
She was originally slated to play this role, but the screenplay was so bad, she backed out.
Oh, shit.
Do you want to know who else was up for this role?
Oh, please tell me.
Sigourney Weaver.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that I dislike that.
I know. I would have been open to
it. I'm a big fan.
But she wasn't chosen. It was Faye Dunaway, as we know.
There's quite an age difference, is there not, between Sigourney Weaver and Faye Dunaway?
Yes, Sigourney Weaver was quite young. I mean, Aliens came out in, 1980s something?
I think there's like a 20-year age difference.
Yeah, she was a little young. And Faye Dunaway was seasoned by that time.
Oh, yeah. And well-known.
Yeah, and her campaign process to get this role, this is how...
So she wanted it.
She wanted it bad. And if you look at her career trajectory, Faye Dunaway has had some successful films. Bonnie and Clyde, I think she won an Oscar for.
Oh, her and Warren Beatty.
Which was an excellent movie. But before, she had some... The movies she did weren't successful, but she was great in them, so she was snubbed. And so she needed a hit. It was time for her to, and so this was a great, you know, I mean, the actress just died. It's Hollywood royalty. It's a, you know.
So let's fucking slam her.
No, but it was a good opportunity.
I get it.
So she needed this. And so this is how dedicated this woman was. She dressed up as Joan Crawford, makeup
love
and all.
Love this.
Went to Frank Yabin's kind of driveway. Scare the shit out of him. because he thought it was Joan Crawford. He had, you know, I mean, Frank, the executive producer, the owner of this movie, pretty much had tons of interactions with Joan Crawford, of course, yeah. Paramount.
Sure.
And so when he saw her, he was so scared because he thought it was Joan Crawford. He thought she came back from the dead because she was just so in character
that
he almost had a heart attack.
I love it.
And from that moment, she got the film.
Of course. Wow.
So yeah, so there's a lot that happened. The reason why I love this movie is because the background story is almost as impressive as this movie. So as I said, Rutana Allen, who plays Carol Ann, the housekeeper,
yes,
wrote a tell-all book called...
When did she write it?
Right after this movie, sometimes
so
in the 80s
and
90s.
Came out, the movie came out, and then Carol Ann...
Wrote a book. The title of the book is called The Mommy Dearest Diaries, Carol Ann Tells All.
Okay, what did Carol Ann say?
Huge problems on the set. Faye Dunaway was a terrorist, like a terror on set.
What?
She's a method actress, so she was in character 100% of the time.
Oh, so she just like...
Yeah. Okay. She was cutting people's scenes left and right.
Was she just drunk all the time? Because that's kind of what...
She was cutting people's scenes. She wouldn't let actors look at her, so they would have to turn her back if they weren't acting in the scene.
There are people in Hollywood currently that exist like that.
Yeah.
And like no one... Not even Beyonce, and I'll say it, has the right to treat people like
no
that.
One has the right to treat, but she sure did.
Alrighty.
She went in so hard on some scenes. They were physically terrified that she was going to injure somebody. Particularly Christina, the actress who played older Christina. Let me get her name correctly.
Scarwise or
yes.
Scar something?
Yeah. Diana Scarwide. The scene where it's, Barbara, please! And she was... She's being interviewed by this woman named Barbara.
For Red Book.
Yes.
A New York journalist.
And Christina comes back from boarding school for the fifth or sixth time. And she's getting in a fight. And she literally is on Christina, choking the living shit out of her.
And they were banging her head on the ground.
Yeah. So scared that they were.
Because she lied about what happened.
Yes.
That's the thing that kills me is like Joan Crawford was a mentally ill woman. There
Clearly.
Is no doubt about that.
Clearly.
And in this scene, you're just like, this is one of those that I was referencing of like, she literally lied to this reporter about her daughter getting expelled. She wasn't expelled. She pulled her out because she was kissing a boy in the barn.
Yeah.
And then she's like, that's a lie.
You wouldn't know. Oh, what did she say? Something like, you wouldn't know where the booze and the boys are.
I'm like, yeah, bitch, because she's had so many uncles, quote unquote, in yes. her life.
So yeah. So
but can I say something about that scene real quick?
Yeah.
Because before she starts to choke her and bring her to the ground, she's like, why did you adopt me? Because I wanted a child. And she goes, don't you act for me. Why did you adopt me? And she goes, maybe it was a little bit for more publicity. And then immediately after, it's like, no, that's not it. I didn't mean it. It's like, yeah, bitch, it is. That's why. But
I love it.
Anyway, that scene was good when she says, don't you dare act for me or don't you act for me. That was that hit.
Tons of scenes like that where she was just like to the point where she was going to injure somebody. The scene where with the wire hanger, she went in so hard. She actually, Faye Dunaway actually damaged her vocal cords and needed a specialist to come through because they could not shoot anymore because her vocal cords were so damaged.
Because she screamed so much?
Yes.
Wow.
She was that. And she's in interviews, she said it took her 2 months to get back to normal because she was so committed to that role. And of course, she was extremely late. Like, to the point they were going to fire her.
I don't... Wow.
To add on to that, Faye Dunaway demanded her then-lover and then-turned-husband, Terry O'Neill, to be given a producer credit. And then Christina Crawford, Joan Crawford's daughter, demanded that her husband also be given a producer credit. Frank Yebbins has been was quoted and said, I have two husbands to deal with. David driving me crazy that Faye was trying to sanitize Joan, and Terry word we were pushing Faye too far and creating a monster. So you have this internal like.
What a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. Of like these two men who are like, we want more. We want more crazy. No, we want less. We want less. And then you have Frank.
She's going to kill someone.
Yeah. And then, you know, Faye Dunaway was openly said, like, I did not like the book. I don't like these scandalous kind of tell-alls. She wanted to actually show the humanity within Joan Crawford. She wanted to show a complex being. And in this movie, agree or disagree, it was one note. Joan Crawford was one note. There was never a scene where you could see Joan Crawford as an actual mother. You just saw her as the monster. Now, we could say A, B, and C, whatever. But at the end of the day, the way this movie was portrayed, she was one note.
Yeah.
Surprisingly enough, Christina Crawford hated this movie. And tried to buy back the rights to the movie.
Guilt? Question mark?
I think it's because it wasn't the story that she had in her mind.
Oh.
The director, Frank Perry, his goal, unlike the original director, Franco Zeffirelli, mm-hmm. He pretty much was trying to, beat by beat, was trying to remake the book. He said, the main reason I wanted to make this movie is because of the issue of child. No, this was the director. He said, my job was to turn the whole thing into a movie that was not only faithful to the book that we bought, but also an entertainment. So he wasn't caring about, let me internalize, let me dig deep into who Joan Crawford was. He's like, if this happened in the movie or in the book, we're going to make it happen.
Which to me, it sounds like even though Christina Crawford was one of the screenplay writers, that is too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Because then at some point, everyone has a different idea of what they want this film to be. Yeah. That's too many people.
Here's three words this movie was supposed to be: glamour, fantasy, and tragedy.
I think it should be glamour, wrath, and wrath. Is what it should be.
I don't disagree, but I still love this movie so much.
I mean, here's what I'll say, and you do this really well, even though you think that I have terrible taste in movies, which I don't, but and I know you don't actually think that. You're the worst. Don't I though? And this was a good movie. And
okay.
This was a good movie.
Yeah.
And
it was entertaining.
And it was engaging.
Yes.
I was pulled in because as anxious as I was,
you wanted to
see what
to
see what happened. But I wouldn't watch it again.
Oh God.
Unless you forced me to.
I might have to. Joan Crawford's other two children hated this movie. Despised this movie. Thought it was a terrible movie.
Well.
Which makes sense.
They weren't in it. So. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
And you know, Faye Dunaway, you know. Really, when we talk about the women, every other woman kind of like disappears.
Right.
When you're talking about this movie, you're talking about Faye Dunaway and you're talking about Joan Crawford.
Yep.
A little bit about Joan Crawford, maybe?
Yeah, please.
So she won Best Actress for Mildred Pierce, which we see in the movie. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Nominated for Possessed and Sudden Fear.
Okay.
Was snubbed for What Happened to Baby Jane, which I also love that movie.
Yes.
Had over 33 silent movie films. So that's just silent movie films. Close to like 66 something just movies. We're talking about just movies. This woman was a powerhouse.
Well, and you see in the movie, how many times does she say, let's get to work?
Yeah.
Like she that's the opening scene.
Like they're like, Joan, are you ready? And she's like, turns, let's get to work. And it's just,
yes.
She probably was one of the first superstars. Like, famous actresses. Like, she started in the silent movie era. She moved into silver screen and she moved to silver screen. And so she transformed, and it's been quoted to say, like, whatever the era was, I became that.
Yeah.
So you just don't see actresses like that anymore.
She was a survivor.
Survivor would be good.
She adapted.
Good word.
She was a survivor. Yeah.
Faye Dunaway saw herself, and she's been quoted to see herself a lot in Joan Crawford. And I know, very interesting, right? I love your face. Her face is like, what the fuck? And it's not so much because of her career trajectory. If you look at a lot of Faye Dunaway's film prior to that movie, it was a lot of sexy, glamorous, mysterious, thriller, kind of dark woman.
Okay.
And whenever she's in an interview, there's this one interview that I kept on watching, and she's like literally laying in the bed and she's like legs spread in this white kind of gown and she's smoking a cigarette and she is just that like slightly European French like damsel in distress, but like she's also a killer, and she is this intense woman, probably
femme
more
fatale.
Yes, probably more similar to like Greta Garbo than like Joan Crawford, who is like this jack of all trades, like I'll sing, I can dance, I can do everything, right?
Yeah.
But what Faye Dunaway saw herself in Joan Crawford was this tenacity, this I'll fight, I'll kill, I'll do whatever. She was a monster in the sense of like she had to be. Like Hollywood made her into a monster.
I will be on top. right?
Yes, I will be on top. I'm a survivor, like you said. So that's what she said. And so she saw those parallels, and that's why she was kind of latched on into this movie.
Interesting.
And interesting enough, and this is the one that, like, I think Faye Dunaway was like, the movie is mine. Joan Crawford was quoted to say, out of all the young actresses in Hollywood, Faye Dunaway is the one who could become a star. So from that moment, it's like,
oh,
it's very
so
much
she
like,
picked her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's very much like Aretha Franklin and Jennifer Hudson. Like, Aretha Franklin said, Jennifer Hudson will play me. Yep. I will not let anybody else.
Yep.
And so from that moment, you're kind of destined to be that person. And then I felt the makeup was incredible.
Oh.
She just, her acting, we could talk about her acting.
The
next,
hair and the makeup was.
I'm surprised I didn't win an Oscar. Like, looking in retrospect, that should have won.
The overlined lips.
The eyebrows.
Thicker brow. The dark chestnut hair. Oh,
she was stunning. You have to say.
Those cheekbones were.
She was stunning in that movie.
Glass.
Stunning.
Yeah,
in
she
that
was.
Movie.
And we see her take. Not good care of herself, actually. It was pretty unhealthy, but, you know, running to the point where she almost falls over and just like everything and like stretching and like just making herself just.
Her legs should have deserved an Oscar. Her legs were always, when she like kicks up
when
her
leg. When she kicks up her leg.
She kicks up her legs and holds it in the mirror and is like looking at it and it's just like fire and desire.
She's like arching her foot and her heel. Like, I'm like, you're going to break your ankle.
I love it.
You're going to break your ankle. Yeah.
So what were your, like, real quickly, critiques of the movie?
So critiques of the movie, I will say that not all the acting was great for me. Okay. The first kind of uncle we see is Greg, who is a lawyer. And they kind of have a falling out, but he helps her get some roles and one that she particularly really wants from MGM, right? Yeah. Which was her first place. She had a contract. And his acting was not good.
No, he won a Razzie for that role.
Did he really? Yeah. Because he was, there was at one point where she says something really mean to him and they're fighting in the bedroom and she's drunk.
And he's like shaking her.
And he kind of has her and he's shaking her. he's just like, Joan.
And she's like,
and it's just like, what the fuck? So that was not good. I thought the little girl was a great actress, actually.
Yeah, she was good.
She was really good. And the other acting was fine. I mean, especially like this is a 1980s film. And so I think the acting fit the time. Other critiques of the film that I would have... I don't know that I have any big critiques. I thought it was well made, but that acting really got me. I was just like, oh, that's bad.
My critiques of the film, and this kind of goes back to Faye Dunaway. I felt the screenplay was terrible, and we can know why. There was like a million people working on the screenplay. Yeah. The final screenplay was written in 12 days in Palm Springs.
What?
Yeah, they Frank Perry and Yevons like knocked it out in 12 days. Because it was just so disastrous.
Let's just get this done and over with.
Frank Perry did not direct Faye Dunaway. When you have an actress that powerful, you have to rein her in. And so she was giving it all, and he never said, let's pull it back. And it's clear, she was on 10 all the time.
Oh, interesting.
And so, like, it's a lot of times, and we'll talk about the cultural impact of this film.
Yeah.
It really did destroy Faye Dunaway's career, not so much because it was so bad, but... The director never really reined her in. He had this like hurricane that he never kind of said like pull back. Like it felt more like he was like, more, hit her again, knock her teeth out.
Fuck her up.
Yeah. instead of saying like, okay, let's pull her back. Let's make this a little bit more complex. There was only one scene where they were like in this basement area and they were washing clothes.
I knew that was so full of shit.
But that was the only scene where she was kind of humane. Like, you know what I mean? It could be full of shit in the sense of like, but it was full of shit because everything else was on 10.
Yeah, that's true. No, everything was like, when she was like,
and there's this one scene where she's like, oh, and you're vulnerable. Like, oh, shut up. But in reality, that you didn't have these kind of lows to like contrast the highs.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think a critique though too is that if they were planning on making her sympathetic, I did not get that.
Yeah.
But did she have a bad reputation as a monster prior to this film?
No, and that's
or was it only because of Carol Ann?
It's because of this film. Her reputation was slammed. And then, so let's talk about the cultural impact.
Okay, got it.
Because we can kick off right there. Two things that were destroyed in this movie. Okay. Faye Dunaway's career. After this, it kind of just tanked. And she really was like distant from this film. She has said openly said this was a mistake in my career because it did just shift how people saw her. Who she was.
Well, that seems like a self-created problem. Yeah. Well, if you're gonna act like a monster.
Okay, but again, whose fault is that? Is it the screenwriter? Is it the director? I mean, it's probably all share blame. But like, as an actress, like you are supposed to, as an actor, you're supposed to give the director, and screenwriter, and producer are supposed to pull you back.
You're supposed to be wrangled.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
That's one kind of methodology, right? Okay. And she wasn't wrangled, so it was. In her mind, it was everybody else's fault. Like, yeah, she could have done some things, but it really was the people around her's fault. Now, her behavior, that's her.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah. Oh, that probably ruined it. But I think the film probably played a huge part of it.
Interesting. Okay.
Another thing was Joan Crawford's career. Just like her reputation was just down the drain. I mean, if you look at it, she was just beloved prior to. Mm-hmm. Her daughter releases this book, mm-hmm. and it just, the movie comes out, and not only does it like shit on her even more, but it just makes her look insane. And so like, yep. Now modern interpretations of Joan Crawford, all we know are either this movie or, like you said, the Ryan Murphy kind of feud.
Betty versus Joan.
Which was, and so that's all you know. So prior to, she was a beloved actress. Now you see this kind of caricature. So when people think of Faye Dunaway, or when people think of Joan Crawford, they think of Faye Dunaway in Mommy Dearest. They don't think about Joan Crawford.
Okay.
Which kind of goes into like, what does this film mean? What does this film turn into? And this is why I love this movie so much. Because this is the Beacon Rewind video essay, and we will try to link it in the video description.
Yeah, for sure.
The opening of the video essay says, this movie was the fucking Citizen Kane of camp. So if you want to know what camp is, this is camp.
And that's why you love it.
And I love this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not like, there's certain movies that are campy. So like, I think a lot of people think about Rocky Horror Picture Show, which was released mm-hmm. in 1975,
yeah,
which was very influential for this movie. Not the production, but the post.
Okay.
And how it's marketed. So you have like Rocky Horror Picture Show. One of my favorite movies is like Two Wong Fu. Another movie is But I'm a Cheerleader. Have you ever seen that movie?
With Natasha Lyonne.
And RuPaul. Have you ever seen that movie?
No.
We have to watch it. We'll watch it. Because I love that movie. But yeah, but those movies were intentionally made to be campy. You know what I mean? You had a lot of movies in the 1970s and movies in the 90s that were made, Jawbreaker, made to be campy. This movie had no intention to be made campy. They thought they were going to win the Oscar. Faye Dunaway is like, I'm going to get me an Oscar.
Do you know who else was nominated that year?
This movie wasn't even nominated.
Oh.
It wasn't even in the running because it was that bad.
Damn.
Yeah, it wasn't even nominated.
Damn.
So this is what happened. The movie was released. People were watching it. Fans were bringing in wire hangers and cleaning products and were like quoting the movie.
Like out of disgust or out of?
Out of like Rocky Horror Picture Show, solidarity. Water guns, like let's do the time warp again. Kind of like, you know, have you ever been to like a Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah, sure.
And like how you have props. It was like that. People were treating this movie like that.
Wow.
And so they switched the marketing. Originally the marketing had like Faye Dunaway and this black and white hand signature, like To My Dearest Fans that were kind of ripped up. It was very classic, kind of like glamorous, but with edges of like terror.
Right.
They switched it to just a simple wire hanger that said, no more wire hangers ever. The baddest mother of them all. That was the poster after the reception of this movie. So they were like, oh, we got to switch this around. This
we got to own movie. Up to this. Yeah.
And which pissed off Frank Evans. And it pissed off Joan Crawford. Not Joan Crawford, but it pissed off Faye Dunaway because it's like, this movie was supposed to be a career changer for me. And you're turning into this kind of campy, bullshitty kind of movie. This is not what we signed up for. Frank actually sued Paramount $10 million because he was so embarrassed.
Well,
he lost.
He lost.
But he was like so embarrassed
what
by this movie.
The heck?
Yeah.
I'm in disbelief.
Yeah. So this movie kind of turned into a cult classic, really.
Yeah.
And the audience who kind of loves it the most are queer and gay people. And so like that honestly was one why it's one of my favorite movies. Drag queens love this movie. It's a very reference often. It's made to be like, I mean, I don't think it was made to be, but it turned into this quotable movies like no more wire hangers ever. Barbara, please. I mean, there's just quotes after quotes after quotes after quotes. Everything that Joan Crawford or Faye Dunaway says is a literal quote.
I have a question and then I want to say my favorite quote.
Okay.
So in the film, her last husband is this Pepsi Cola Titan, the soft drink king or whatever. So there's this joke about like, how does the queen of Hollywood feel about getting married to like the king of soft drinks or something like that? So anyway, they're married, blah, blah, blah. She spends all his fucking money. He has to borrow against the company, but she kind of, you know, when they're on their Fifth Avenue apartment that she's renovating, he's like, you know, hey, we gotta be economical here. We gotta cut our spending back. And she's like, no. And then in the next scene, you see that she is now a widow. Did she fucking kill her husband?
No, she didn't quit. Well, that was the one.
You sure?
No, that was the scene in that movie. She said they're renovating their apartment, and she there's a wall that they can't because it's a bearing. It's a wall bearing wall, yeah. And she says, "Tear down that bitch of a bearing wall, put it a window where a window ought to be." Like, insane. And everyone's looking at her like, "Yeah, Joan, like you're amazing." Like this
Joan,
woman,
you're such a fucking genius.
Yeah, they can't. It's architecture. You can't. No, he.
And in the same scene, her daughter asks for money, and she said, not a cent.
It's not a cent.
And then her husband gives her some money.
Yeah.
But anyway, my favorite scene. So when we see that she's a widow, she's in the board of directors room at the Pepsi Cola, and they're like, "Hey, bitch, you owe a lot of money to the company because your husband had to borrow so much to basically
build your apartments.
In the finest." And she kind of gives this whole speech, and she threatens to, you know, go against Pepsi, and you know, she's like, "I'm the star.
I'll pull my endorsement.
All this stuff." And she goes, "Don't fuck with me, fellas.
I fought bigger monsters. This is not my first rodeo. I fought bigger monsters in Hollywood."
And she doesn't say rodeo. She says rodeo, which is even better because it's referencing Rodeo Drive, right? And it's just like, "Don't fuck with me, fellas. I got to start inserting that into my own vocabulary."
That is probably my favorite scene. Also the scene where she like is swimming against Christina, and she's like, "But nobody ever said life was fair. Tina, I'm bigger and I'm faster. I will always beat you." Who says that to their child?
To their like 6-year-old child.
And Christina's like about to pass out in this pool. They are like swimming laps, like racing each other, and she says that to her child, and Christina's like, "That's not fair." Like, and she's like, "Yeah, life's not fair."
And then later on in the film, she goes, "Why is everything always a contest with you?
Contest with the child."
And it's just, and it's like, "Because of you, you psycho."
My favorite scene is literally she breaks up with her boyfriend.
Oh, right.
And she's in her rose garden in a full ball gown.
Oh my God.
And it's like tons of roses, and she has shears, and she's just hacking out the roses.
Chopping them.
And then she like there's a tree, and she just screams, "Tina, bring me the axe."
And I'm like, "Oh my God, she's gonna murder her children."
And she's
that
like chopping at this tree. And it's just, I want to like read, like, the reason why this movie is camp. Susan Sontag's Notes on Camp, which is like it can be considered the definitive like conception of like what is camp. Okay. Have you ever heard of this?
I've heard of her.
Okay. She wrote on camp, which camp is very queer based driven, it's very essential to queer community.
Right.
Camp is. You can see camp is like everything's in quotations. So she says like, "It's not a lamp," air quotes, "it's a lamp. It's not a woman, it's a woman." And so you see, this isn't Joan Crawford. This is Joan. It's about a person. Everything's intensified. She says it proposes itself to be serious, but because it's too much, it can't be taken seriously. And this is why this movie is perfect, because they intended this movie to be like, Oscar winning big bucks movie, and it's so much, so one note.
Yep.
And it's so glamorized. That's the other thing. It's stylized. This movie is big technicolor.
Yes.
Big hair, big makeup, big everything. It's so stylized. Like, it's just too much.
The house.
The houses were big. Holy cow. Outfits were too big. Everything was
furniture, everything.
Nothing was like a humanized, realized. Nothing felt like real.
Never.
It was just too much. And so that's why it's camp.
Oh.
And that is why I love this movie so much.
I appreciate this explanation, because when you say you like camp, and I don't really, I mean, I'm glad that we did this movie because I think it's important to mix like films like this with more like more recent films and different genres and everything. And especially one that had such a crazy impact and derailed some people's careers. I know we're on a tight sketch today, but my question to you is, what if this film would have been made today? What if Angelina Jolie dies and then the little one, Vivian, writes a book? You know what I mean? Because now we're so much more sympathetic, and now we're more in a culture where we listen to people that have survived, you know, abuse from their parents and have grown up with alcoholic parents and have been neglected and, you know, all of these things. So like, I would be so interested to see what it would be like if this kind of film or this kind of crazy expose, and not one like what we see now with like, you know, pithy little, you know, examples, but like a truly terrible Hollywood parent.
Yeah. I think it would have, if this movie was made today,
it would win.
It would win.
It would win.
It would win for sure. Absolutely. I mean, look at what they did with Judy Garland. Garland was probably a little bit more beloved and was a little bit more on display, but like still was a tormented soul. Like she wasn't the best mother, but she wasn't a terrible mother.
And like, for those of you who don't know, Liza Minnelli is Judy Garland's daughter.
Yeah. So I think the movie would have won. I think it would have. One big critique of the movies, I don't know if we talked about that, it's like made in vignettes. And so you don't know what time, like even like a movie where you see a young Christina to a young Christina, you don't know if it's like been 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 2 months. You don't have a sense of
time.
Could
be the next day, yeah.
Yeah. And so that causes a problem because it turns less into this kind of like interaction. Like you don't see this timeline, and it's more like these like small vignettes of like Joan Crawford being like a terror to this child and not like this developing kind of relationship. So
yes.
I think you would have seen, they would have taken a period of time. Mm-hmm. So like maybe when she was like trying to win Mildred Pierce or maybe the decline, or they were just taking a period of time and focused on that, which was what they did with the Judy Garland movie. I think it was like when she was in Paris and when she had a small stint, and they did flashbacks of Judy Garland when
she
was younger.
That's how they would make this today.
And I think that's what they would have done today. Yeah. And it would have won an Oscar.
Yes, it would.
It would have won an Oscar because now we love to see these dirty, grimy, but we love to see this kind of humanization of not only the villain, but also the victim. And I think
certainly,
the story would have been a lot more stronger. And I think Christina Crawford, the real Christina Crawford, would have enjoyed it because it would have really focused on what this did to Christina. How did she overcome it? And even to an extent, you know what I mean, how she might have wrestled with forgiveness of her mother. Because there is a scene towards the end where she gives, her mother wins an award and she gives a speech for her mother and she's crying. And I think that's a beautiful scene.
Yeah.
Because Joan Crawford's in her hospital bed crying and Christina's crying. And so there's, I'm not a child of abuse, but I'm assuming a lot of children, adults of abuse, you know what I mean? Some are, of course, they just hate their parents and never want to talk to them again, but some still have to find a way.
Oh, it's a very complicated.
Yeah. To accept and forgive and to internalize the trauma that they endured. Yeah. And you don't see that in the film. Like at the end, she's just like, oh, I'm going to get my revenge. And so that's why it feels like a revenge-y film. You don't see it as a sense of like, I've forgiven my mother, or this is how I kind of conceptualized what happened to me, or this is my, you know what I mean, my victory.
But then what you just said, we don't know how much time, like that's the thing, is like,
yeah,
how much time has she had to grieve? Is she still upset? Will she come to this resolution later, perhaps, where she's like, you know, I did love my mother despite all of her faults and all of the abuse, you know? And that's interesting.
And that's the other problem is like, they would probably pick not a better actress, but they probably pick a better director who could ring it in, because the thing about this movie, Faye Dunaway eats this movie up. Watch the movie. Faye Dunaway is like consuming, all consuming. And not just like she's like fork and knife, just like
eating it up. It's a rare New York.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like Christina was supposed to
eat your steak, Christina.
Like she's just consuming. And so Christina is almost in the background until she's like disobeying. And then you're like, what? You're kind of.
Oh my God, she's going to kill her. Yeah.
So these perplexed moments. But anyway,
man.
I say if you want a good, we did a decent job, but please watch. It's on YouTube. It's about an hour long. It's called Mommy Dearest and the Legacy of Faye Dunaway and Joan Crawford. It's also featuring Lipsinka, who's this famous drag queen who does like a lip sync parodies of Joan Crawford. And it's by Be Kind Rewind on YouTube. Does a brilliant job of just breaking down this movie and the cultural kind of impact of how this movie kind of shifted the landscape. But please watch this movie.
And if you want to watch it, it is available. If you have an Amazon Prime subscription, it is free on Amazon Prime.
And it's also on Pluto TV.
It is on Pluto TV.
A little bit harder to watch on Pluto TV.
All those commercials. But yeah, I watched it on Prime. So you can find it there. But if you have a Roku, just search and you'll find it.
And I would say, like, watch Mildred Pierce. Watch What Happened to Baby Jane. Learn more about Joan Crawford. Because she was a complex woman, but she was a fierce woman.
She was a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, and she does deserve to be recognized as an actress and not the drama and conflama that surrounded her life.
Yeah. You can be a good actress and a shitty mom.
Person. You know what I mean? And this is a good, this will be before we kind of intro out. This would have been a good opportunity to kind of conceptualize, and, you know, people have controversy about separating the art from the artist.
Yes.
This would have been a good kind of.
Oh, shoot. Especially, yeah. Oh my gosh. We could go on for that. Thank you for introducing me to this movie.
Yeah.
I'm glad that.
Did you have fun?
I did have fun. It was weird to be in the passenger seat. You know how much I like control.
Shut up and drive.
Our next episode, I think we've decided we're going to do another actress spotlight.
Yeah. So tell us who you want us to.
I did actually get a request.
Oh, should we say it now?
Yeah.
Who?
Well, we had thought about doing Tilda Swinton next time.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, because that's like our number one that we want to do. Some requests that I've gotten so far, we've gotten Kerry Washington, she's really more of a television star than she is.
She's had a few movie roles,
but nothing. So we're kind of thinking about one. We haven't forgotten. My friend Lindsay really wants to do Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh!
Which we would love to do.
Oh! Whoopi Goldberg will be next. That's a good one.
So we can thank our friend Lindsay, who is literally...
You want to kiss my butt? You know who that's from?
Is it Ghost?
Yeah!
Yes!
Girl, you in danger. Okay, yeah.
I love that. But my friend Lindsay, who is literally an angel, she's the best person I've ever met in my entire life. So
shit.
No, you would fucking love her. She is just fantastic. So I think Whoopi it is. We're going to do this for Lindsay.
So exciting.
Oh my gosh. Well, thanks for listening to this like fucking chaotic. I still feel anxious from watching this movie.
I feel alive.
Never want to see it again.
I'll watch it tonight.
But I appreciate you introducing it to me.
You're
and
welcome.
Expanding my repertoire, as they say. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Hi, this is Erin.
And this is Colin.
And you've been listening to
Let's Hear It for the Girls.
It's always a great time at Speak Studios in Boise, Idaho, and we hope you enjoy learning about the girls.
Now listen, you better like, subscribe, and review us on all major platforms. We'll see you next time.
And thanks for listening.